powered by Righteous Media.
Welcome to Independent Americans. Welcome to episode 270. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. The presidential primary season is finally over, and the general election for President of the United States in 2024 is here. And now is definitely, most definitely, a time to stay vigilant.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away.
That's the key. Can you bring more people in than you drive away? That's especially the key for Donald Trump, who is now even more imminently the Republican nominee for president again. And as you heard, Nikki Haley is out. She was the first major rival to President Trump and the only woman to launch a campaign against him for the GOP nomination. Trump dominated Super Tuesday. But he lost one state in Vermont. And the real story, again, is not how much Trump is winning. The real story is how much he isn't getting. Trump's been a runaway train as a nominee, but he's still not getting lots of Republicans and continuing to struggle with moderate Republicans and independents. And this Super Tuesday, again, underscored his general election weakness, which was continuously and consistently revealed by the presence and support for Nikki Haley. Vermont showed most vividly how Trump continues to drive away moderates from his own party and to drive away critical independents. And Biden is old. We've talked about it a lot, and it is a problem, a big one, and a growing one. A new New York Times Siena College poll revealed that a majority of people who voted for Biden in 2020 now say he's too old to be effective. They worry about his age, and it's intensifying what has become a critical, urgent threat to his reelection bid. It's a problem for Biden, a big one. Like it or not, it is. And it's getting worse in perception and in reality. And so many Democrats are still in denial. But it is a growing and serious issue for the future of Biden's campaign and the future of a freedom-loving America. Yes, Biden is old, but Trump is toxic. So right now, all that being said, my money is still on Biden. Barely. But the X factor throughout may be the fragile health of both guys. Any day, we could wake up to find out that one of them didn't. It may not be probable, but it's possible. And it's the most dangerous course of action scenario that far too few in this country are considering and planning for. And every single day, the stakes go higher. Every single day, the stakes are high. Yes, it's now finally Trump versus Biden, and Nikki Haley is now out. Also out is Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota. the Democrat who kept trying to get traction and mostly, I think, kind of embarrassed himself. In the Michigan primary, he earned less than 3% of the vote there, falling in fourth place behind Marianne Williamson, who had dropped out a couple weeks earlier. And he fell behind the quote-unquote uncommitted ballot option that was a protest vote against Biden and took 13% of the vote. After that pathetic showing in Michigan, Dean Phillips' campaign crawled like a dying animal into Super Tuesday, where he finished far behind Biden and even, again, behind Marianne Williamson in most states. Dean Phillips failed to attract anyone, except for past guest and our friend Andrew Yang and a few others, but he definitely didn't get any traction with independents. Like so many other presidential campaigns, the only thing that the Dean Phillips for President campaign accomplished was increasing Dean Phillips' name recognition and draining his personal bank account and padding the salaries of some more than willing political consultants. But in the end, he did endorse his party's nominee, and Dean Phillips will be strongly behind Biden, like so many other Democrats throughout Super Tuesday. But critically, Nikki Haley, in her concession speech, did not do the same. She did not endorse Trump yet, which is key. And check out our last episode with Michael Steele for more from the former GOP chairman and me about where those Nikki Haley voters might end up and where independents might end up, including millions of us who haven't had the chance to vote at all yet this year or last year. Super Tuesday wasn't so super for independents. This week, millions of us independent Americans were shut out of the process, which is bad for us, bad for our elections, and, of course, bad for our democracy. Previous guests on this show, John Updike and Nick Troiano, wrote a piece for U.S. News that highlighted this issue. They wrote, quote, "Yet on Super Tuesday, closed presidential primaries, where only voters registered with a party can participate in four states, Alaska, California, Oklahoma, and Utah, denied 6.2 million independents a true choice in the contest for the White House." And no matter how you cut it, that is some bullshit.
Smells like some bullshit that you're on right now. Smells like some bullshit that you're on right now. Don't bring me whatever bullshit you're on right now. Smells like some bullshit that you're on right now. Don't bring me that bullshit.
Yes, this is going to be a year of some bullshit. And speaking of bullshit, former Democrat and self-proclaimed independent Kyrsten Sinema has bowed out of the Arizona Senate race. She's an incumbent, and she decided she was an independent a couple months ago, and this now clears the field for a two-person race between Representative Ruben Gallego, who's joined us on this show before, and Republican Carrie Lake. So it'll be a Democrat versus a Republican with the newly self-proclaimed independent Sinema out of the way. Now, everyone knows that Sinema would have lost her re-election badly anyway, and she's only opportunistically independent, as we've covered on this show in the past. Her popularity is low with real independents and most Americans. Maybe she's hoping to be RFK Jr.'s VP pick, or that she can somehow convince No Labels to put her on their ticket. But the last Rasmussen Reports poll from February 21st through 26th showed Gallego at 42% and Lake at 45%. That's what it looked like a couple weeks ago with Sinema out of the way. And now, with Trump leaning in hard in support of Lake, Biden's low and falling popularity, and given where Arizona tends to be trending, it's pretty difficult to see how Ruben Gallego can beat Carrie Lake. And I invite both of them to come on this show to talk about it. Because as always, independence will be key, especially in this race, and especially this year. But don't listen to the partisan and corporate media that tells you that independents will only be spoilers. We're not spoilers, we're difference makers. And everything else you hear is some bullshit.
Don't you bring me whatever bullshit you're on right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like some bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
That you're on right now.
Speaking of some more bullshit, and a topic we've covered on this show and I've covered in other media outlets, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin came clean and testified before Congress and discussed the fact that he waited 3 days before alerting the White House that he was in the hospital. Now, this whole thing was clearly bungled badly. The secretary should have made sure the White House was notified. His staff should have made sure the White House was notified. And the public should have been notified that our Secretary of Defense was in the hospital and unable to do his job. The whole thing was completely botched. But the Secretary of Defense came clean and recognized that. He accepted personal responsibility and said he was making changes. And I think that he and we all have much bigger fish to fry right now. And hopefully, we can all move on. But communications is definitely not a Biden administration's strength right now. And unfortunately, in this toxic political environment, the Secretary of Defense and President's political opponents are far more focused on scoring political points on them than defeating our enemies. They would love for Joe Biden to fire Secretary Austin and disrupt things at this critical political time. So would our enemies. Instead, Congress, from both sides, especially the Republicans, should focus on urgent appropriations funding to Ukraine and other allies, and to basic stuff like not shutting down the damn government. And we're going to go much deeper into the Ukraine part of that specifically coming up with our guest. But never forget how many of these same Republican members of Congress that are outraged now about Austin were completely and totally silent and complicit when Senator Redneck, Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville, was throwing an extremist political wrench in the entire Department of Defense for months and months. They were pretty silent when that was going down. So don't get it twisted, folks. Our enemies are celebrating our congressional division and dysfunction most of all. That is our single biggest strategic national security weakness right now. Not Austin or anything else they want to spin today. Keep your eye on the ball, people. Stay vigilant and don't buy the bullshit.
Whatever bullshit you're on right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like some bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
That you're on right now.
Oh, yeah.
There's lots of bullshit out there. And there's lots of stuff that's getting underreported because there's so much bullshit out there. Including that this week marked the 4-year anniversary since the first COVID-19 case reported at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Since then, the VA reported 25,945 deaths connected to the virus, which was about 18 a day. And that includes 1,648 that have happened in the last year, which is about 4.5 a day. So that's a painful reminder that at least 25,945 vets were lost to COVID. That's one of those stories you don't hear because there's so much other bullshit. And some good news coming out of the VA that you probably missed in the flurry of bullshit. This week, the VA made a historic announcement. And this was the message from VA Secretary Dennis McDonough. And I want to make sure you hear it and you share it with any veterans that you know. If you served in Vietnam, the Gulf War, Iraq, Afghanistan, or any combat zone after 9/11, you can enroll now in VA healthcare. You can also enroll if you've never been deployed but were exposed to toxins or hazards while training or on active duty here at home. That includes vets who worked with chemicals, pesticides, lead, asbestos, certain kinds of paints, nuclear weapons, x-rays, and more. Many vets think they need to apply for VA disability compensation benefits to become eligible for VA healthcare. But that's not true. That is bullshit starting now. Today, millions of eligible veterans can enroll directly in VA healthcare without first needing to apply for VA benefits. And as the secretary says, VA healthcare is proven to be the best, most affordable care in America for veterans, and they want you to apply today. So learn more and apply at va.gov/PACT, P-A-C-T. I'll also link to it in the show notes. But this is some very big veterans news that's buried deep beneath the bullshit. Huge, transformative, and overdue change. A massive step for veterans, for the VA, and for America. And that's no bullshit.
Whatever bullshit you're on right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like some bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
That you're on right now.
But what is bullshit is how little focus and support Ukraine has gotten lately. Ukraine's popularity seems to be falling faster than Joe Biden's. Ukraine is getting damaged by the distraction, the division, the disinformation, just like Putin hoped for. Even better, maybe. And he and our enemies are celebrating that. But we can punch back against that bullshit, just as we have for years on this show, and we will again in this episode. So we're bringing back a returning champ, a man who is inside Ukraine right now, an American Army veteran, editor and founder of the Counteroffensive, and our guy inside Ukraine who always cuts through the bullshit, our friend Tim Mack.
Sometimes I grow so tired.
Tim Mack is a fascinating guy, an investigative journalist with a background in politics, national security, and emergency medicine. He's written about the inner workings of the NRA, he's a former U.S. Army medic and EMT himself, and his work has been featured in Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, The Daily Beast, The LA Times, and more. You used to hear him regularly on NPR's Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and the Politics Podcast. He's reported from places like Ukraine, South Sudan, Djibouti, Israel, Japan, and Hong Kong. And last year, he launched his own new media venture called The Counteroffensive. And he's back to break down the latest from inside Ukraine. Don't buy the propaganda. Don't buy the bullshit. Here's your quick download on the latest from Ukraine, why it matters, and a few incredible stories of heroism that will define our time. Welcome to the Jason Kelsey of propaganda busters. Welcome to an episode that Putin doesn't want you to hear. Welcome to a conversation to bust through all that bullshit. Welcome to Independent Americans. Episode 270. Ladies and gentlemen, independent Americans around the country, around the world, and especially inside Ukraine. We are going to continue to focus on Ukraine, despite the fact that many in the American media are not. It's never been more urgent. It's never been more important. And we've got a guest, a returning champion, to help us break it down. Our friend from inside Ukraine, the great and powerful Tim Mack, is back on Independent Americans. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. I feel pretty hyped up from that introduction. So I'm ready to roll here.
You know, we got to get hyped up because I feel like I said this to somebody yesterday, you know, Ukraine's popularity in America seems to be falling faster than Joe Biden's. And we're going to have to bring some energy since he can't.
Just to fight the so-called Ukraine fatigue.
Yeah, right? I mean, I want to get into that. I want to get into how much you see it, where you are, but let's start with that. Tim, for folks who maybe didn't hear you back in May of 2023, the last time you were with us, where are you and how are you?
So I am in Kyiv. I am a journalist and the founder of The Counteroffensive, which your listeners and watchers can find at www.counteroffensive.news. So what we do is we dive deep into personal stories happening here in Ukraine and use that to illustrate what's happening in the news, try to create an emotional connection to fight through some of this Ukraine fatigue by going and telling stories about people, who they are, and what they're going through. And so that's what we've been doing. It's been a long, you know, I last appeared with you in May. It's been a long, I can't believe it's almost been a year. A lot of time to get physically exhausted. I feel a little physically exhausted. I think a lot of people do. I'm a lot better off than a lot of folks in Ukraine, though. So I don't have much to complain.
And you've been doing a great job of bringing those personal stories forward. And I think, frankly, that's what's kind of missing in a lot of American media. It feels like statistics or policy, but not really about the human stories of this conflict. And you've been bringing those forward. I want to dig into more of them. But you're also you know, you have that unique perspective of being, you know, someone who served in uniform in the U.S. yourself, and that, you know, informs your journalism. But can you give me a sense of something that's really tough, Tim? What is morale like in Kyiv right now? I mean, you're there, you've been there for a while, mm-hmm. you can see the ups and downs. Is there Ukraine fatigue in Ukraine?
It's impossible to have Ukraine fatigue in Ukraine because every day the air alerts sound and every day there's new and terrible news. And, you know, whereas in the United States, Ukraine is a policy decision, here it's people's lives. And it's their father's life or their partner's life or their wife's life, their child's life. It's deeply personal and real. That said, that doesn't mean that people can't be exhausted and tired. And that doesn't mean that morale can't be down. And in fact, morale is probably as bad now as I've ever seen it. There's a sense of listlessness and confusion. There's a sense of even betrayal. I would say that a lot of Ukrainians looked at the United States as a staunch ally and friend, felt that they stood up and resisted at the encouragement of the United States. And now when they're vulnerable and things aren't exactly going their way, they feel like the rug's been pulled out from beneath them. And this is one of those times when a great American strategic victory is slowly turning into a possible American strategic defeat, in that Ukrainians feel deeply betrayed by the folks who they felt like they could trust the most. And that's a really deep worry that I have over the medium term. But, you know, I think that in the medium to long term, if things don't go Ukraine's way, they might very well blame the United States for pulling support at a critical moment for them. And so what do we see here in Ukraine? We see a lot of confusion, not a lot of public strategy for how Ukraine is going to prosecute the war going forward. And part of the reason for not having a public strategy is there's no certainty over what kind of help and assistance they can expect to get, either from Europe or from the United States. How can Zelensky or Syrsky, the new commander-in-chief in Ukraine, how can they make a solid strategy about how the next year is going to go if they don't know what kind of tools they'll have to work?
Yep.
This is all happening in the context of what the Institute for the Study of War expects may be a renewed Russian offensive in the spring or summer. And so all these things are combining together with now more than 2 years of war to really depress morale, to really act as a huge weight on everyone's shoulders. And I'm hearing that all the time from almost everyone that I speak to, that things are looking really bleak and they expect it to get worse before it gets better, if it does get better.
I think that perspective is so important right now, Tim, and your perspective in examining it and seeing it change and ebb and flow. And, you know, this is what Putin's been counting on all along, right? That American support would dwindle, that he could wear down the Ukrainians, he could wear down the West. And I was talking to a friend of the show, Adrian Bonnenberger, last week, who said, you know, we lost in Vietnam, we lost in Iraq, we lost in Afghanistan, we can't lose in Ukraine, right? And I think that framing that up for America has been a struggle for those of us who understand it so clearly. And I know it's been a struggle for people in Ukraine. Can you talk, Tim, about what does it look like day to day in Kyiv? How do you see signs of the war? I mean, we're thinking about caskets coming home, you know about the air raid drills. You're talking about the general mood, which as a reporter, you have, you know, a unique ability to feel. But how do you see the war on the streets and right now in Ukraine? And how do you see that looming cloud kind of manifest itself over, you know, this critical Ukrainian city?
A few points. I mean, firstly, the air alerts the bombardments are a regular feature of life in Kyiv and even more so in points east of the capital city. And so that's a regular reminder to everyone. Secondly, you can't escape a conversation without some new depressing piece of information, whether it's some personal anecdote from from someone close who someone you're meeting with just lost. Or the Ukrainian government sees battlefield casualties as a sensitive piece of information, so it does not generally release the number of killed or wounded. Although Zelensky recently put the number at 31,000 killed. I would imagine that would be an undercount, given that that doesn't include, you know, missing in action, that can be presumed to be dead. And one of the things that does make it more real is if you go to a cemetery in, say, Western Ukraine, where a lot of soldiers are from, you'll see huge numbers of new plots, flags, flowers, memorials being built just over the last few months. And it's clear that people are losing their lives on a daily basis. If you go further east, you'll see makeshift memorials all over the place. You'll see mourning people. This is fresh and new and ongoing and devastating to so many folks. While the United States has kind of lost a major part of the attention it has for Ukraine, like I said, you know, Ukraine, it's not a policy decision. It's real. And that's another element of it too, is the personal toll that's been taken. And the third and final point I'd make on this is the economic toll. Ukraine, as the war enters its third year, is having a lot of disputes with Poland, which is one of its staunchest military allies. But Polish farmers are blockading Polish-Ukrainian border checkpoints right now, preventing Ukrainian truckers from bringing goods into Europe. That this is just a pocketbook issue, but those farmers have decided that they no longer want to support Ukraine in an economic way. And I'm seeing all sorts of businesses that have managed to survive a couple of years starting now to shut down. They're not able to maintain commercial activity because folks don't want to spend money in an uncertain period of time. So all of that is really devastating to observe and difficult to process, and they're the hallmarks of what is happening here in Ukraine.
Tim, that kind of insight is really, really important, I think, for folks to think about stores shuttering, disruptions to the economy. I want to ask you, you know, to dig into the politics a little bit, because here in the U.S., it feels like, you know, we have these blips when Zelensky visits someplace high profile or someone from the U.S. goes, right? So Schumer was recently there. Other members of Congress have come. When you're in Ukraine, from where you sit, do Ukrainians see that? Do they see Chuck Schumer? Does it register on the news? Are people talking about the American dignitaries and senior leaders that are showing up? And kind of a related question, what's Zelensky's popularity like? I know it's a difficult thing to put your finger on, but he replaced his senior military commander. That was a big move. I think we take for granted that he's going to live forever. I mean, you know, we would have said it was a miracle if he survived the first couple of months. But every day, you know, this guy could be taken out, especially after Navalny's passing. I think we could understand the magnitude of what would happen if Zelensky was killed or died. And that would, of course, be a priority for Putin. So are the American visits registering? And what's the popularity, favorability rating of Zelensky looking like now in your view?
Yeah, well, public surveys show that his popularity is dropping, but they're dropping from the astronomical heights of a wartime presence, right? So, you know, they're dropping from 90 down to, you know, the 80s and even high 60s. These are approval ratings that, you know, Joe Biden or Donald Trump or any other American politician would be very happy to have, let's say. Here's the thing, is that the war is dragging on. And I think that when you talk to folks, even folks who are supportive of Zelensky, they'll ask, you know, what's the strategy? What's the path moving forward? And there's so much uncertainty about it. There are also supposed to be elections held this month, but the Ukrainian constitution prohibits an election during martial law during a war. And there's also big questions about how would soldiers vote, as well as how would we represent folks who are in occupied areas of Ukraine right now. And so right now, elections have been delayed, which have led to essentially not, you know, Ukraine is not having this this pressure valve to express their most immediate political opinions. You know, if Zelensky were to hold an election, it would kind of be in his interest to, because he still remains extremely popular. There's no real alternative candidate that could likely unseat him, at least among, you know, regular political figures. There might be someone, you know, emerging from a military background or something like that. But, you know, it's a really uncertain time. And from the political perspective, I think, you know, Ukrainians see, you know, American and Western officials coming here. And they think, well, that's all well and good. But what about the folks who aren't coming? What about the folks who are voting affirmatively against Ukrainian interests in Europe and in the United States? You know, how can we, you know, they're thankful, of course, for Chuck Schumer's visit, but, you know, they're worried less about Chuck Schumer's visit. They're worried much more about how can we get Mike Johnson to let this vote on Ukraine aid come to the floor of the House. I think that's what matters.
Yep. And so we're going to build, you know, throughout this grind of Johnson holding up the Ukraine funding. Then we've got a NATO meeting in Washington, right, in June, which will also be key. And then I got to imagine the biggest factor of all that everyone in Ukraine is watching is the American election, because there's no sense of what's going to happen if Trump wins. But suffice to say, they'd probably be betting on the bottom to drop out, right? It doesn't look like Johnson and Trump are going to totally turn this around. So as they plan to continue the fight against Putin, does everyone there at this point assume America is on the way out? I mean, it's a hard thing to put our finger on, but I think, have we lost the Ukrainian trust, right? It feels like hearkening back to the times of Afghanistan, where we left our allies hanging to die, literally. Is there a feeling now that America's gone and not coming back? Or is there a feeling that Biden can be reelected, they can, you know, score some strategic wins on the battlefield, continue to get support from Europe and try to turn the tide? And especially also, notwithstanding, I mean, the Navalny death has generated some level of pushback inside Russia, right? Some level of protest. You know, Putin will likely squash it, but there's always a feeling that's a domino that could tip internally inside of Russia, right?
Well, I would say a couple things. I mean, I think that on the broader strategic sense, Ukraine, from the Ukrainians that I talk to, their one big strategic hope is that the war causes instability in Russia, leading to destabilization, leading to disintegration and a lack of an ability to continue to be a threat in the same way that it had been. This is something that, if it does occur, will probably take a lot of folks by surprise. And mm-hmm. it's not something we can count on in an right. imminent way. But in terms of imminence, I would say that, you know, that while Ukrainians have not given up on Americans yet, we're on the cusp. You know, I think that that Ukrainians are deeply concerned about what will happen with the presidential elections. They're deeply concerned about why and how, given that the House and Senate both overwhelmingly support Ukraine aid, if you were to actually have a vote, why that hasn't been possible, why that hasn't moved forward. And if there is some finality to it, and if they're told that it's really not coming and there's no hope of it, I think that's when you'll find a lot of that view that you suggested, which is giving up on the United States or feeling ultimately betrayed and finally so. So that's I think a risk to America's strategic interests in the long term, not just in Ukraine, but among all its allies. That you hear in China, and I did some reporting from Taiwan as well. We've recently launched a monthly issue on Taiwan because we think it's so important to cover these places where authoritarianism is challenging democracy. In Taiwan, you're hearing all the time that in Chinese propaganda that you can't trust the United States. Just look at what they're doing in Ukraine. They're going to say they're going to back you, but when the chips are down, they're only going to back you for as long as they have the attention span to think about you. And once they forget about you, you're on your own. Just look at Ukraine. So that's something that has really broad strategic implications, all across Europe, among NATO allies, and in Asia, in the Indo-Pacific region as well.
Tim, I think, I'm glad to hear the counteroffensive is on Taiwan, because this is all interconnected. And I think we struggle to try to communicate that to folks who maybe aren't deeper into foreign policy or aren't global news watchers, trying to explain the interconnectivity and how it impacts American national security. But what do you think is the story that is not being told? You're on the ground, you got a good sense of the macro and the micro. One of the stories we've continued to come back to is the American veterans and Americans who have signed up to fight in different ways over there. I've always been surprised, frankly, it's not a bigger story, a bigger personal story. We don't know enough about these folks who've been serving and been killed. But what do you think is one of the most underreported stories that you wish folks pay closer attention to happening in Ukraine?
I agree with you entirely. I think that there hasn't been a lot of, fundamentally investigative, deep reporting on American military veterans. I'm working on a story right now on one such case. I won't step on my own story too early, but, we focus on telling these deeply reported future stories about people. And so that's what we'll be doing with this story. And we did a story recently about the interconnections between Taiwan and Ukraine. And we told that story through the mother of Jonathan Tseng. And Jonathan is the only Taiwanese soldier to be killed in Ukraine, fighting for the Ukrainians. I went to Northeast Taiwan to meet with his family and try to understand who he was as a person, what motivated him to go all the way to Ukraine, a place where he didn't speak the language, didn't know the people, to fight against the forces that he knew could one day threaten his own home islands in Taiwan as well. I think you're right that this is all interconnected. We have this philosophy at the counteroffensive that empathy and authoritarianism can't mix. That when we tell these stories about people, we tell you who they are. We dive deeply into their lives. We tell you how dictatorships are trying to crush these lives. It's going to motivate and compel people to action. That's what we're hoping to do.
Tim, you mentioned in our conversations prior to this that you really had some incredible reporting around the Battle of Antonov Airfield. And I wanted to know, what you can share about that, right? I wanted to give you a chance to share any insights into that or anything else that really you feel shows the personal side. But I obviously encourage everyone to check out all your work. But can you summarize that or something else that you think is really incredible?
So we spent months working on what I think is the most important battle of the war in Ukraine so far. So we spent months tracking down folks who fought or were around this place called Antonov Airfield, which is northeast of Kyiv, about I'd say 45-minute drive. I made the drive quite a few times to do interviews and interview dozens of people over months, because what we really wanted to do was explain what happened there. I mean, this was a battle which I argue, after doing all this reporting, is the reason why Kyiv didn't ultimately fall in the first 72 hours of the war. And I really wanted to give some human voice to it and explain how close Kyiv really was to falling. The Russian Special Operations Forces tried to land at this airfield, capturing the airfield and then bringing in thousands of Russian forces behind them, along with armored vehicles that were slated to land on cargo planes that were already in the sky. And the story that we did is a deeply reported story on how the Ukrainians managed to deny them that opportunity after the Russians landed. A really poorly equipped ragtag group of Ukrainian forces, National Guardsmen who weren't supposed to be in combat at all, combined with random Ukrainians who are just grabbing AKs, one magazine, trying to fight back however they can, and four sets of artillery that managed to make it within a striking distance just in time to knock out that airfield and prevent the cargo planes from landing. It's an epic story of, I think, the most important battle of this war so far. And we spent a lot of time fleshing out exactly how that all happened. I'd encourage anyone who's listening to check out that story right now on the counteroffensive.
Please. No, you describe like the small arms, people running them over with cars, right? Like really, I mean, it's almost like
it's greedy stuff, like just desperate stuff. Yeah.
It's Red Dawn stuff, right? I mean, it's like, you know, we talk about it a lot, but like, you know, if the Russians invaded, you know, your town, how could you fight back? And it was resourceful and gritty and innovative. I think that Snake Island got a lot of attention and other flashy
points. There's a bigger point, I think, which brings us to the news on all. This isn't just a historical event. This is part of a war that continues to happen. The question, though, is will the West give the United States, or sorry, will the West give Ukraine the tools it needs to win? Ukrainians have shown through sweat and blood and tears that they have the will and they have the ability, when they're properly equipped, to fight back and push back against Russia. I heard very early in the invasion a quote about how, you know, Ukraine, as long as there's a 12-year-old boy with a plastic spoon in Ukraine, there will be resistance against Russian occupation. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the stories of, you know, folks who support Ukraine running over Russian soldiers with their car, doing anything that they can to push back against the invasion. They will fight. The Ukrainians will fight. The question is, will the West support them and give them the tools they need to effectively resist?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the narrative of Ukraine has been miraculous in my view. I mean, the way they've told their story, especially in the early days, you know, the gritty, innovative, heroic, David over Goliath type early days of the grandmas throwing soup cans at drones, right? And Snake Island and you know, fuck you, Putin warship, all that stuff. In the early days, the building of the legend, right, was, I think, so important. And I think that legend lives on, but almost needs like a new reinvigoration. And you're telling those stories, you know, you're communicating the human part. I love what you said, you know, empathy and authoritarianism don't mix. And I think what we're struggling right now, those of us who feel a connection to Ukraine, is to create that empathy with our fellow Americans at a time when they seem distracted and are going to get further distracted. And they're being, you know, fed misinformation. We know that misinformation and disinformation is a part of this effort from Putin and his allies. I want to finish, Tim, by asking you kind of a straight up question. As Tim Mak, right, as a person, I know you're an incredible reporter, you're doing all this work, but if you were sitting in a bar with some buddies back home that you were in the military with, and they were like, you know, I don't really feel it. You know, Ukraine's not our problem. Mm-hmm. You know, we got shit to deal with back here. We've got all these migrants on the border. Trump says, don't worry about it. I mean, why should I give a shit about Ukraine? What would you tell them?
I would say it's not just about Ukraine. It's not just about this place thousands and thousands of miles away. It's about American credibility. It's about American national security all over the world. It's not just about this place that perhaps you've never been, this place called Ukraine. It's about the Asia Pacific. It's about the West Coast. It's about America's ability to exert its influence in everything from economic to investment to military to soft power to culture, all coming down to, can Americans be trusted at their word? This is implications for everything from diplomacy to the military and to business. Like I said earlier, China being a huge threat to the United States is something I think that person at the bar, my friend, who maybe I served with, might be concerned enough to understand, hey, look, this is not just about Russia. This is about Russia and China and Iran and the many other countries in the world who want to do the United States harm. This is about setting a precedent, and this is about sending a message to all of those other people, all those other states that want to kill Americans, want to cause harm to American national interests, and telling them, no, we're going to draw the line here to protect the democracy that's trying to protect itself.
Tim, as a follow-up, right, I'm going to be that ornery guy in the bar. You know what? I heard that. That's what that sounds like, what they said in Vietnam. It's what they said about Afghanistan. You know, they said that about Iraq, too. Like, we don't trust, you know, Putin, but we also don't trust our own government. They told us this so many times before. Why should we believe Joe Biden And you now, why is this different than all those other times when we heard it was another domino that was going to fall and America would be screwed?
I think it's all about an issue of motivation, right? In the cases that you mentioned, the United States was trying to come in and implement democracy and implement Western values and implement its view of the world. The United States doesn't need to convince anyone in Ukraine that they want to support democracy or that they want to protect their own territory. There are no talking points on this, right? The Ukrainians inherently want to defend themselves. What the United States is doing here is helping them do that. It's not coming in and implementing an agenda. It's not coming in and saying, you know, you must turn your state from communist or authoritarian to democracy. It is a country that has created its own democracy through street protests, through demands on their own government, that is seeking to remain free. And that's what the United States is doing.
Tim, you're brilliant, and you're important, and your work is urgent and a tremendous public service. And, you know, I'm grateful for all the work you do and you continue to do. It's a grind. I know it's hard for you and your team, but you're doing some really, really important stuff that is cracking through. And especially as, you know, a guy who served in uniform yourself, I think you're showing folks how they can continue to serve at a higher level. And I'm really grateful that you took time to join us again and that you continue to do this work. You and I said it earlier, we got to have you on more often. We'd definitely like to do that in the months to come because it's absolutely going to be critical. Ukraine, in many ways, is more American than America right now. And that's a tough pill to swallow for some folks, but I think we got to push it on them. And your reporting, you know, is the stories of American heroism that we wish we had right now. But it's happening in Ukraine, and you're there to witness it. Thank you for all you're doing, Tim, and for joining us on the show again.
Thanks so much, Paul. Thank you for the kind words.
You got it. Stay vigilant, my friend. My deepest thanks to our friend Tim Mack for joining us from inside Ukraine. Apologies if you heard any technical issues, but it's difficult to record people from Ukraine when there are airstrikes happening on a regular basis. If you want to see video, be sure to go to our website, independentamericans.us, or go to our YouTube page and see that he is one of the many helpers that are out there. We talk about it all the time. Even in Ukraine right now, the helpers are out there.
Always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines. If you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
The helpers are out there, and so are our Patreon members. My thanks to all of you. If you're not one of them yet, go check out independentamericans.us, where you can join for as little as $5 a month and help us fight the bullshit and keep this power coming. And you will get extra content with Tim. I take you a little bit further with Tim. We talk about things that he loves about Ukraine, and we talk about things he misses about America. But you Patreon members are going to get exclusive extra content. You also get discounts on Independent Americans merch, and you get to hear this and all episodes ad-free. So check it out at independentamericans.us. You can also check out upcoming events, and there's one that I want to share with you. I told you I am coming to Texas, and I am headed back down to Texas, and I can't wait.
In that Texas town, about to check outside the game. You know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you're gonna go.
This Saturday, March 9th, in Austin, Texas, you can join me. Come out and check me out at an independent voters meetup. It's sponsored by our friends for Veterans for All Voters. We're going to get together and unite some independent voters and military veterans to talk about all that's going on in the independent space and to talk about a new campaign that our friends from Open Primaries have launched called Let Us Vote. But come check us out. Have a Shiner Bock, have some barbecue, and come to the Punch Bowl, 522 Congress Avenue, Austin, Texas, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. That's 5:30 to 7:30, Austin, Texas. I'm going to be down there for South by Southwest, and we have a free, open, independent voters meetup. And all listeners of Independent Americans are welcome. So come on down if you're in the Austin area. Check us out, and I hope to see you there.
I'm ready.
Well, here it's fine. If you got the time. Be sure to find me on social media. Let me know what you think of this show and send any guest suggestions you might have. Tell me what you want us to cover to help fight through the bullshit. Yeah, the future will be full of bullshit, but it will also be full of independence, because we independents are the future, and we are not alone in our independence. America's more divided than ever, but we at Independent Americans and Righteous Media are rising to change that, adding light to contrast the heat of all the other political shows and so much of the debate in this country. So if you're among the now 50% of Americans who are independent, this is your show. If you're a Republican or Democrat or Green Party member, or you're just independent curious, this is your show too. If you're a concerned American or a person living anywhere else in the world who cares about the future of this country and our world, this is your show. All are welcome. And we invite you to join us and be a part of the solution. Because our independent movement is the hope for the future. Country over party, people over politics, light over heat. Busting up the status quo, and fueling a new movement that spans all across our country. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Tim Mack. If you did, please share it far and wide, and invite others to declare their independence. And stay vigilant, my friend, because eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. And know you're not alone in your vigilance. We are all vigilant, and we're all in this together. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you in Austin and South by next week, and until then, down with Hamas. Down with Putin. Slava Ukraine. Stay vigilant, America. And don't believe that bullshit.
Righteous Media.